the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is Bill Carter.
And this is still Jeff Kellum. I'm glad to see you again, Bill, and to put together another one of these Spirit of Jazz podcasts. And I'm fascinated by your topic that you've chosen.
It is not the same old thing. Every one of these podcast episodes is completely different.
I understand that. Yes.
And we keep faking them and making them up as we go along.
Well, but I do a great deal of research before I begin.
Oh, okay. That's good. Our listeners are just sitting on the edge of their seats or driving along in their cars wondering, what kinds of research have you done for this one, Jeff?
Well, I spent the afternoon at a concert.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we went to the Philharmonic, which is an orchestra in a small city, but an orchestra made up of people who come here from various parts of New York State and Pennsylvania. So it's a magnificent orchestra for a fairly small town.
Okay, and what did you hear?
It was the Mozart Requiem.
Oh, my.
And so it was about an hour long with a wonderful chorus made up of some university singers as well as some of the better singers throughout the community. And it was a magnificent job, a standing ovation at the end. I was interested in the fact that the maestro said as he introduced the piece that ordinarily applause between movements is, I don't know how he put it, but he kind of said it was something more modern than it hasn't been around for ages. It's kind of a 20th century thing. He was saying, you know, during this piece, it would be better not to applaud between the movements.
That's and right.
What made me think then was how often jazz is interrupted by applause.
If it's any good, it is. People like a solo or particularly a drum solo, they tend to respond with their hands.
Yeah.
So tell me, did they do anything new with the Mozart Requiem?
I doubt it. I have the feeling that it was note for note, but you know, there's a sense in which if a player has a particular interest in this piece of music, they might play it with a little bit more passion, or perhaps if they've had a bad day, they may be a little bit off. There's no improvisation that I know of in the Mozart Requiem or anything else Mozart wrote.
So what you're saying here is they're sticking pretty close to the page.
Sure.
For this Groundhog Day episode, we're going to do not the same old thing. And now, of course, I'm drawing on that now ancient movie with Bill Murray, plays yes. Phil Connors, a television weatherman, who gets stuck in a loop in Punxsutawney and just can't get out, just keeps repeating the same old thing.
And we've all had that sense of deja vu now and then, haven't we?
Sure, sure. Deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra used to say.
Yeah.
And I will say that in some more commercial settings of big band music, there were some iconic recording solos. I'm thinking of Glenn Miller's recording of In the Mood. There's a saxophone solo, and it's pretty much played the same way every time. It's actually been transcribed and put on the ink.
I was thinking the same thing, that big bands have arrangements that someone has thought through, and that maybe they've taken a very familiar tune and they've arranged it in a certain way for certain instruments or certain soloists. And once people hear that, that's the way they want to hear it. Isn't it?
That's right. Well, if it's been fixed or recorded. I was recently looking over an article written by Lyle Mays, one of my all-time favorite musicians, and he talked about the role of the composer, the jazz composer. Often thought that the jazz composer creates about 40% of the performance, and the other musicians come and add their own little stamp. And he said, you know, you got to play with that a little bit. The creativity comes in at the front end with the composition. And it happens, of course, in the middle. The quintessential jazz performance is never like it was the last time you played it.
And you'd be very disappointed if it were.
True. I mean, it's music that is created in the moment. It's happening now and here. And musicians, I think they bring their own kind of personal stamp on this. Some it's by temperament. Miles Davis famously said, "It is my curse that I have to change." And throughout his career, particularly the last 20 years or so of it, he was changing all the time, changing styles, changing band members, changing approaches to the music. that drives a lot of people crazy.
But when I think about some of the jazz tunes that people would know very familiarly, I think of Little Darlin', Neil Hefti's tune, that has been played generally at a very slow pace. And every once in a while, somebody speeds it up, but it's still Little Darlin'. Right. It's still Neil Hefti, but it may be somebody else's arrangement. And then I've thought of the Sonny Rollins tune, St. Thomas, because I've heard that played by so many different artists, and there's still the tune there. It's still there, but that's maybe 60% is going to be different depending on who the group is and how they're feeling that day.
Well, that's true. And if the band is playing without ink or paper, which is often the case, they're going to recall as much as they can of the tune with precision, perhaps, at least for the statement of the melody. But then they're going to launch off into the stratosphere. And then it comes a matter of both imagination and group chemistry.
And tell me about how that affects a vocalist who has some lyrics to work with.
I have no idea.
Well, I do. I've just played on my radio show, Ella Fitzgerald's Ella in Berlin album. I played the cut of Mack the Knife where she forgets the lyrics.
Okay. And what happens?
She scats her way through it, and then she makes up lyrics as she goes. And she references Bobby Darin and Louis Armstrong as she sings the song, and the audience loves it. They're in Germany, but they understand her English very well. But here's the song that's a traditional song, comes out of Germany. And then this popular tune takes a whole different shape because the fact she says, here comes a verse I don't remember, and then she vamps on it. But there are other vocalists who are very comfortable with just singing the lyrics as they are. But again, in a live performance, suddenly you have a great deal of freedom to do what you want to do, feel what you want to feel.
I mean, how different is that from second verse, same as the first?
That's right.
Well, and you mentioned Little Darling, that wonderful Neil Hefti arrangement. The original trumpet solo has been transcribed. It is written into the score. And if a big band plays it, that's to this point what is expected. Unless there's some kind of spark or permission given to go forward, to take the music in a different way.
Yeah. That would be the difference between playing the ink or playing the chart that's in front of you. And some back in the 40s when they were playing dances and so on, the band leader wanted a certain sound and didn't want people to depart from that sound. That was their trademark.
That's right. About an hour south of where I live, there was a band pavilion, and they had big bands traveling out of New York maybe 4 or 5 nights a week. If you heard the band on the radio, that's pretty much what you expected then to hear live. It was popular music.
Right.
But the jazz impulse is to take it forward, to add your individual spin, and to go with what's happening in that moment.
Is that more likely to happen in a smaller group rather than a larger group?
Usually. There's much more freedom. The larger the group, generally, the more structure there is to the arrangement.
Right.
I remember Bill Evans, the pianist, wrote the liner notes for Miles Davis's album, Kind of Blue. He basically just referred to a Japanese art form where you take a pen, put it on a paper, and you begin to sketch or draw, and when you lift the pen from the page, you are done.
Mm.
Someone can drive themselves crazy just trying to be perfect about that. Others are going to say, let me live within those parameters and see what comes. You've got to give up any sense of perfectionism, although you can't back off from your expertise. You've got to be good. Let me share with our listeners a little bit about what that's like as a composer and a musician. Some years ago, we were doing a first Christmas album called Fragile Incarnation, and we got through a whole slew of Christmas carols and had a little time left. Everyone else had been sent off packing. I was left in the studio with the engineer, and I said, Peter, turn on the recorder. And I sat down and I played a tune, and I didn't like it, so I kept playing it. I paused and started it again, and then I didn't quite like that, but I had a new idea, so I took it again. Here's the tune, at least a little bit of it. I called it Welcome Home.
So that's Welcome Home, and that's from the Fragile Incarnation
album. That's right. It's the very last cut.
And then there's another version with a vocal.
Well, that's right. It changed the whole thing entirely. It took a while to find what key would be for our vocalist, Warren Cooper. We settled on the key of A flat. The first one was in the key of C. It had started in the key of F, you know, so you kind of work with the palette of these tonal colors. Let's hear what happens when Warren sings some of this.
My soul is so tired from the roads that I've wandered, and hope withers from my despair. Been so close, yet so far, as I count broken blessings, will someone notice I'm here? I wait for a light to shine in the window. I want to hear one call my name, and I hunger to know if I'm welcome or wanted. Will someone gather me in?
The voice of Warren Cooper, Welcome Home, a Bill Carter composition that is, boy, well-loved. I mean, people hear that song and everybody wants to hear it again. But again, it would be different, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and folks didn't realize, I think, when they first heard it, that for the longest time, the whole piece was in flux. I mean, there was a basic structure, and then when I added words to it, it began to take a shape and a direction. But even then, in the middle of it, where I add a little bit of piano improvisation, it makes it completely different. In fact, let's listen to a little bit of that.
Once again, the basic tune is Welcome Home by Bill Carter. So mm-hmm. Bill, what were we hearing there?
I was improvising on part of the tune. I'm part of the structure of the tune. And when Warren comes in, we go to the middle and then we take it out. None of that was scripted. That's the amazing thing. It was planned. It was intended, but it was not confined. And if we had goofed it up, well, we could have done another take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the only take.
Well, you know, I've got some albums, jazz albums, where there are alternate takes. Mm-hmm. You know, on one side, there's Charlie Parker playing a tune, and then maybe on the other side of the record, there'd be the alternate take of that same tune. And some of us hear it and don't quite hear the nuances that Charlie Parker would have heard, or that you would have heard as a musician.
What you're talking about is when music becomes marketable. What is the best performance of this? What's the one that we want to get out? And also, in terms of marking it for history, which is the version that we want to hang on to?
Mm, yeah.
Jazz musicians have always made their living by performing. The idea of becoming a pop star is extremely rare, and pop stars are kind of stuck singing or playing the same piece every night for the rest of their careers if they get a hit. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of James Taylor sings You've Got a Friend every single night, and he's at it for over 50 years now.
Yeah. And he even got a song about singing Fire and Rain over and over. That people expect to hear it. Yeah.
Now, the change, and I really love this guy's music. Bruce Hornsby has these kind of snide and sarcastic and hard-rocking tunes about creepy people in Virginia. And
I knew some of them.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
I was one of them.
And, you know, the guy in the polyester suit, or the doctor who's feeding his wife arsenic because he's got a nurse behind the curtain, and all these kind of things. And the tunes open up. And I remember a documentary where one of his bass players says, the number one rule in our band is watch Bruce. And the assumption is that there's more music than what you've contained. There's more imagination. A theme we've picked up on again and again in previous episodes of this podcast.
Speaking of Bruce Hornsby, those who know his music off his CDs or know his hit songs, you see him in concert all by himself at a piano without the band. Mm-hmm. The same thing would be true of Bruce Springsteen in that Broadway show he did, where it was just Bruce telling his story and playing his guitar. And it wasn't like it was on the record. There was a freedom. There was creativity. There was an independent spirit that says, this is the way I'm feeling right now.
And I guess it pushes the issue for me. What do you expect of music? Is this just a soundtrack for other activity? Eating, dining, kissing, driving down the road? Or is this an experience in which you participate as actively as those who are making the music in front of you? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's where this becomes kind of a spiritual moment. Something happens, something finds you, something is created. It's tapping into some primal energy, spirit, something. I remember, you know, listening to Dave Brubeck's quartet, and my grandmother had given me the album, and I've told that story 100 times. They were playing Someday My Prince Will Come, and I laughed out loud at one point because I could hear them creating something that didn't exist before. And unlike my piano lessons at the time, which were pure drudgery, they were having fun making music. And I wanted to be part of something like that.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, that's playing music.
And the music is playing you in some way, too. Yeah. Let me give you an illustration. There's a tune on our Interior Window album called Streams of Mercy, kind of a samba of sorts. Let me play a little bit of that. And we're going to go as far as the beginning of the piano solo, which everything kind of stops and the piano plays sparely for a while, just kind of in the air. So this is Streams of Mercy from Interior Window. Thank you.
from the Interior Window CD by the Presbybop Quartet. That's Streams of Mercy.
Now, you were present not only for that recording in the studio, but you were present, Jeff, on the tour when we took that for an international tour of the Mid-South. And first night, we were in Lewisville, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., and we played it, and we have a cut of that. Now, we'll end with the statement of the melody and go into the beginning of the piano solo. It's far more aggressive.
Yeah.
It's moving. And, you know, I don't know why. Maybe it was 7 hours in the car with those guys. Maybe it was having something quick to eat, taking a quick shower, playing.
But this was from a live performance.
It's a live performance.
And so that means there were others participating by listening.
That's right. And when you're in the studio and the light goes on and you have to count off the tune and you have to try to get it down for posterity, there's a whole lot of mental and emotional intensity going into that moment. But when you play it for a group of people, and if you're feeling some freedom, that's when things can happen. It's a different kind of experience.
Can a tight band play loosely?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, here's a little bit of the of Tony Marino's bass solo. I just love the way that guy plays. He just pulls the notes out of those strings. But now here's a third version, also live. And this was pretty close to the original intent of the piece. I was trying to mimic a slow stream that I watched and admired up in northern Vermont. And the water's just trickling down this valley and the water meanders. So give this a listen.
So based on a meandering Vermont stream, that's another take on Streams of Mercy.
That's right. And it develops. It doesn't just wander, but I also put it in a different key. The first one is in the key of E flat. This one goes up a half step to the key of E, and it totally changes the effect. And as band leader and not only composer, I'm trying to push the guys and the band in a new, fresh direction. Mm-hmm. I added a new component. We dropped the tempo. Then when it comes into tempo, we have a little more fun like we traditionally do, but something else has happened in the meantime.
Well, the stream in Vermont is going to be different every single moment.
And every single season.
Yeah, and the music will reflect that when you're sensitive to its roots.
I think so. I mean, this is one of the things I love most about jazz and where I find a great deal of spiritual power. When something unexpected happens, I often encourage folks, if they're listening to the music, if they can't hear it live, then find some recordings when it was made live. Mm-hmm. Not in the studio where everything's safe and guarded, which might be pristine and perfect, but where there's the possibility of Ella forgetting the lyrics or the saxophonist honking the wrong note.
Yeah.
Or the drummer hits a rhythm that kind of throws everybody into a tizzy and takes them maybe into a different direction.
Well, this wasn't exactly Groundhog Day. We'd never done this show before.
We never have, and we won't ever do it again. But it is a good conversation. And friends, we're glad that you've tuned in. And maybe this will get you thinking about whether or not you're going to try something new this week. Maybe go off the page or maybe get a pen and put it on a piece of paper and design something. And when you lift the pen, you're done.
And now we're going to close the program the same way we always close the program, with the same music, the same voice, the same words. You've heard it before. You're going to hear it again.
And we're glad you're still tuning in. So tune in again. We've got more good stuff to come.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.